And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Revolution starts right now. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand. The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show, and we're here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m. This edition of The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by PlumbingSupply.com. Shop from the comfort of your home and have plumbing supplies delivered to your door by PlumbingSupplies.com. Your online plumbing supplier since 1995. So last week, according to the online news outlet Chico Soul, the city of Chico settled a lawsuit filed by one of their own journalists over the violation of the California Public Records Act. The city of Chico was ordered to provide the documents requested by the reporter and to pay the legal fees of that lawsuit. The costs of that judgment to Chico taxpayers this time is $43,000. Before we get into exactly what this lawsuit was about, I do want to remind you that this judgment is one of many judgments that have cost taxpayers money because the staff and or elected officials have acted in bad faith or were acting irresponsibly or just incompetently. For example, back in 2018, then-Mayor Sean Morgan had a member of the public arrested while he was speaking to the city council simply because Morgan didn't like what this member of the public was saying. As a result of that arrest, a judge awarded the citizen $50,000 because his First Amendment protections had been violated. And the $50,000 was paid for by taxpayers. Then, of course, in 2020, in the Warren v. Chico lawsuit, a federal judge determined that the city was most likely violating the cruel and unusual punishment protections contained in the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and the judge ordered the city to pay the legal fees of over $600,000 of the unhoused plaintiffs. This, again, was paid for by Chico taxpayers. Then, just this year, when Scott Rushing, the father of Tyler Rushing, who was the young photographer killed by Chico police, he won a judgment in a federal appellate court. The city's attorney, Vince Ewing, had his Los Angeles law firm write a writ of certiorari asking the Supreme Court to review that case. And as we discussed here on The Real Issue, any lawyer who knows anything about these types of cases would tell you that this is a $50,000 exercise that would never be heard by the Supreme Court. And again, Chico taxpayers were left with another $50,000 bill when the Supreme Court denied a hearing. But let's get back to the most recent lawsuit that has cost Chico taxpayers even more money. Tonight on The Real Issue, we will talk with the Chico Soul reporter Dave Waddell about the information that he has been requesting and was denied for over a year and a half by the Chico Police Department and District Attorney Mike Ramsey until a judge ordered the release of the unredacted files that he is entitled to as a member of the media in a free and democratic society. Then during the second half of The Real Issue, we will talk with Hillary Crosby, Executive Director of Safe Space Winter Shelter, about their work this week in providing cooling centers to Chico's unhoused community during this heat wave. So to begin, I have on the phone with me Chico Soul reporter Dave Waddell. I am always happy to welcome you back to The Real Issue, Dave Waddell.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So, Dave, let's put this into context. Let's provide some context for the lawsuit that you just won against the city of Chico. You were reporting on four deaths at the hands of the Chico police, but your requested documents were either highly redacted, meaning a lot of the information was blackened out, or your requests were simply denied by the city and by the district attorney. So first, Dave, give us an overview of the cases that you were covering and the information that you were seeking from the city.
Well, the cases I was covering were the killings of Eddie Gabriel Gabe Sanchez in 2015, the killings in 2017 of Desmond Phillips and Tyler Rushing, and the killing in 2020 of Stephen Best. And I was seeking investigative reports on all of those killings. These PRA, Public Record Act requests, date back to November 2020, so quite a time ago when I first submitted the first of these four. And the city did not provided a certain number of records in each case, and then declared the Public Record Act request closed. And then, but it was obvious, very obvious, that there were records that they had not provided, and because their own internal affairs reports made reference to these records, but they said they did not retain them in some cases. Which means they either somehow lost them, or after they used them, they deliberately destroyed them. In any event, they withheld records first, and then they either lost or destroyed records, and then they did some redactions that were got out of hand. on things like autopsy reports and criminal records. So I eventually had to hire an attorney, and he wrote a number of letters, communicated many times with the city attorney, and at one point it looked like they were on track to give us the records, and then all of a sudden everything stopped, and eventually we filed suit in February, and we got this rather quick settlement for the rec. Since the suit was filed, they've been slowly rolling out all of the records, and they finally finished on June 3rd. They undid the redactions that we objected to, and they're supposed to pay us. They promised to pay us, pay my attorney $43,637 by the end of this month. So that's been, that's kind of the overview. Like I said, it was a fairly quick settlement. They had, they were in a very weak position. You know, expression, I guess, if the facts are against you, you argue the law. If the law's against you, you argue the facts. And I had the law on my side, I had the facts on my side, and I had the better lawyer on my side. And they were eager to settle. And I think the big reason they were eager to settle, and I was eager to settle too, because I didn't want this to cause taxpayers should be furious about this. I didn't want them to cost them any more than it needed to. But we could have done, for example, we could have deposed Matt Madden about what became of those records that they didn't retain. But if we deposed Matt Madden, you know, one deposition leads to another, this litigation would have become much more expensive mm-hmm. very quickly. So we don't really know what happened those records, but I believe they were destroyed, so they wouldn't have to redact them and give them to me, and then the DA had to give them the records again, restore the records, and then second time they redacted them. Eventually they redacted them properly and gave me the records, which have led to some great revelations, disturbing revelations. In some cases,
Dave Waddell, I do want to get into what was in those documents that were withheld from you for quite a while. You said this was a pretty speedy process, but just as a reminder to listeners, you filed a public records request back in November 2020, and so it was relatively speedy from a legal perspective. But this is more than a year and a half ago. But before we get to what you did eventually receive from the city, I do want to sort of underscore and ask you to talk a little bit more about two things that you mentioned. You said one thing is that you read the internal affairs documents, and those documents referred to documents that you requested, and the city said, oh, no, we don't have those.
You're right.
And so that's what I find a bit bizarre, is that you said then later on you said, well, they had a very weak position because they didn't have the law on their sides and they didn't have the facts on their side. It seems very peculiar that they would just say, oh, no, we don't have those documents. What kinds of reasons did they give you for not giving you what you were requesting that was clearly that clearly existed as documented in the internal affairs reporting?
Well, they put it one way, that they did not retain the record, and they never expanded on that. The records that were missing were records, were reports, investigative reports that were prepared under the oversight, the orchestration, Mike Ramsey, and these are by his so-called Butte County officer-involved shooting / critical incident protocol team, and they prepare all these different reports, and so all those those were prepared in Ramsey's criminal investigation, and then he sends all that stuff over to the city, and that's where you know, the city is responsible for, you know, redacting and getting that information out. And they, so they, and, you know, at some point they decided, and I'm sure it was on Matt watch, that they didn't want to redact any more records from, they didn't want to redact those records from me, so they were just going to say they didn't have them anymore and try to, you know, wash their hands of it and move on, but it didn't work out that way.
And just as a reminder to listeners, Mike Madden is the current police chief here in the city of Chico. Dave Waddell, the reasoning that they gave you for not giving you those documents is that they destroyed the documents seems like a violation of Records Keeping Act. So it seems particularly odd that they would not follow the law, claiming that they had violated a different law. Did that come up at all in your lawsuit?
No. I mean, they didn't say they destroyed them. They said they didn't retain them. And, you know, so to my lawyer, that meant they were either lost or destroyed. I don't see how they could have been lost, so I think they were destroyed. You know, I mean, anyway. I mean, that's the way the Chico Police Department's operated administratively. You know, honesty hasn't been something they've cared particularly about in a lot of cases. If it helped if it kept the department from looking bad.
And you have said on this program before that you are shocked at the if I remember correctly, Scott Rushing said something very similar, that it is shocking how the Chico Police Department operates in terms of their record keeping. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR. I have Dave Waddell, reporter, journalist with Chico Soul, who just won his lawsuit. And the Chico city of Chico has to cover his legal fees, which is about $43,000, as well as turning over documents associated with four police killings here in Chico dating back to 2016. Dave Waddell, let's talk about what you did receive. So you said there were a lot of pretty enlightening bits of information that you received through this Public Records Act request after you sued the city and got what you were looking for. Talk about some of the things that you learned with this new these new documents.
I think the most startling case was the Eddie Gabriel Gabe Sanchez case, because so little truthful was put out by Mike Ramsey and the police department. And I looked at the videotaped interviews of the two officers who were there, Mark Bass, who killed Gabe Sanchez, and David Bailey, who was alongside him, but didn't fire. And then there were two witnesses who both said that who contradicted the police, who gave these interviews and these reports that I looked at that said he didn't have a gun and he was just running away, and that one officer reached into his holster, lifted up his shirt, reached into his holster, pulled out the gun and set it aside after Gabe was shot to the ground. And then there was a, the autopsy report, which initially was all blacked out. Various diagrams, reports showed that this, it was simply impossible. I think for Gabe Sanchez to be shot, if he was holding the gun in the way and standing in the way that Mark Bass claimed he was, because Gabe Sanchez was shot in the left cheek twice. One bullet exited his right neck, right side of his neck, and the other lodged in his right eye. So all of this stuff was overwhelming to me in many ways, because I feel like I had a big responsibility to tell this story and tell it right, because there was so much that all these things I just talked about were left out of Mike Ramsey's report, mm-hmm. Which was issued very quickly. know, it was just, so I spent a lot of time writing that story, and there's been quite a react. I think there's like over 40 comments on the Chico Soul site about that story, and Leslie's story about my lost victory has gotten a lot of attention as well. So that, I think that bodes well. This is starting to get out.
So Dave Waddell, or to you know, I just want to remind folks that Dave, you and I talked about this story that covered the death, the killing of Gabe Sanchez, and I just for listeners, it was an amazing interview. I have to say, Dave, it was an amazing story that you wrote for Chico Soul. And if somebody wants to go back and listen, I'll come up with the date. It was about, well, I'm going to say 6 or 8 weeks ago, maybe longer, as well as it's on the Chico Soul website, the original story. So if anybody wants to go back and look more into it, Gabe Sanchez's, some of his family members reached out to me after that interview, and they were very appreciative that we had covered it here, but they were very appreciative that you had covered this story, Dave Waddell. I'm wondering if through this...
By the way, I think you interviewed me the day it came out, and I know the story was posted May 11th, so...
May 11th, anyway. Okay. Okay, so yeah, more than 2 months ago. So around May 11th. So I encourage listeners to go to ChicoSoul.org and check out that article. It's incredible, the details that you uncovered. But Dave, my question to you is, with this new information that you have been receiving from Gabe Sanchez's killing, as well as the documents you got on Tyler Rushing, as well as Desmond Phillips, as well as Stephen Vest, I'm wondering if that information can be used by the families of these victims in pursuing any sort of lawsuit against the behavior of the police department.
Well, I think yes and no in some cases, but I think in the Sanchez case, I know they had a suit. The family had a suit a while back in behalf of Gabe Sanchez's son, who was 10 years old when Gabe was killed, and is 17 now, I believe. And that suit was dismissed without prejudice because of some counsel issues. And so I believe the Sanchez family is going to try to find counsel and pick that up again. So that would be a very positive result, I think, if the city were just sued because they've gotten off way too easy on these killings up here, and Chico Police Department has. They've been very lucky. And those reports Mike Ramsey has written is a big reason for it.
And what do you mean by that?
He leaves out all this stuff that reflects negatively on the officers, you know, and then his so-called investigators, they don't ask the officers any questions that, Mark Bass, you know, you say you shot him when he was facing you. How come the bullets went through the side of his face? Could we talk about that a little? No, they don't ask him stuff like that. They don't even come close to questions like that. It's really quite... it's really quite something.
So I do remember when we did talk about the Gabe Sanchez article from May 11th, and our conversation and your article on Chico Soul left me with the impression that this critical incident committee that comes in when this kind of situation happens, and they investigate. And as you point out, that District Attorney Ramsey writes up his report in a way that doesn't ask those probing questions and sort of justifies whatever action had just taken place. And when there is a request for the true reports, the actual interviews with witnesses and so on, those are just withheld. And I'm wondering...
he doesn't even want his investigators asking those questions, let alone writing reports about it. They avoid asking questions. But I can give you an example.
Please.
But you were asking a question.
No, go ahead. Please give us an example.
I'll try to give you this quick example, and I could think of many, but the famous Feaster case in Paradise, mm-hmm. where Officer Patrick Feaster, this is 2015, about the time of the Sanchez killing in Chico, Officer Patrick Feaster shot Andrew Thomas, who was a drunk driver who crashed. His estranged wife, who got thrown out of the car and died shortly thereafter. And as Andrew Thomas was climbing out of the overturned vehicle, Feaster pulled his gun out, aimed it at him, put both hands on it, and shot him in the neck. You could see that Andrew Thomas had nothing in his hands. And then for 11 minutes, Feaster didn't tell anybody that he'd fired his gun, and until he had to. And anyway, Ramsey wanted to call that an accidental shooting, and kept up with that as long as he could. But what I wanted to mention was, in terms of, Andrew Thomas was seriously injured, shot in the neck, paralyzed, and in the ICU. And he had a breathing tube on. As soon as that breathing tube came out, he's still heavily medicated. These two investigators from Ramsey's office barge in there and, pretend like they're his friend and stuff. But they don't ask him a single question about the shooting. They want to find out stuff about Andrew Thomas, anything negative that they could put into their report. Mm. But the problem was, Andrew Thomas was extremely injured. And at one point he asked, heavily medicated, and at one point he asked these detectives to kill him. Even though the detectives didn't want to talk about the killing, Andrew Thomas did. And he tells the detectives that Feaster had hit him like he was an effing tin can. He shot me like a rock. And then none of that makes it into the clown detective's report. And, of course, none of it makes it into Ramsey's report because he wants to call this an accident. Anyway, that's the kind of investigators, it's right. Just rigged.
Right, right. Dave Waddell, this is certainly, as we've already talked about, this is certainly not the first time that the city of Chico has been sued and lost, and taxpayers have spent a lot of money. It's not the second time or the third or the fourth time that the actions of elected officials and staff and police officers have done something and taxpayers have paid out. Your lawyer, as quoted by editor of Chico Soul, Leslie Layton, your lawyer made the point that the city, because of this lawsuit, the city may have learned something through having to pay out legal fees. They might have learned something through this process, maybe the fourth or fifth time that they have been sued and lost and had to pay for the actions of its representatives. Dave Waddell, what do you think? You think the city may have learned something this time?
Well, I don't think the current police administration has learned anything. I think that he's a short timer now because he's retiring. I do think it's, I do. My own view is it's important for the Chico Police Department, the city manager, to go outside Chico to hire the next police chief. It would be nice if, I think if that chief was female, because what we have is a department with, I believe they have 15 sergeants, something of that number, and I don't believe a single one of them is female, and there's nobody above the rank of police officer that's police officer slash detective that is above that rank that's female at the Chico Police Department. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty weird thing in this day and age. And Madden and O'Brien, and you can kind of do the O'Brien slash Madden administration, but Madden, promoted Mark Bass.
Oh, was it? Go on.
Matt Madden promoted him to sergeant.
Yeah.
And he can get a nice little bump on his retirement.
Absolutely. And so for listeners, let's be really clear here, Dave. So Chief O'Brien retired. He was the police chief. He retired, and he was very involved in a lot of these documents that you were seeking, and they were denied. I wonder how much they're in the documents that you finally did receive. But he retired and then was appointed. Now he's on the city council. He is a sitting city council member. And then Matt Madden actually became the police chief, and he was appointed city manager, but that would ruin his retirement. So now he's not going to be the city manager, but he's just retiring. But he was the one that promoted the police officer that shot and killed Gabe Sanchez, and the report, the internal investigation that you have uncovered, what Officer Bass told the investigators is not consistent with the autopsies. So no. There's a lot going on, and as a result of all of these bad acts, everybody seems to get promoted and everybody gets more power than they did before they committed these bad acts. And so it's only through the investigative reporting that you're doing, Dave Waddell, and the work that you're doing over at Chico Soul that we even know this. But the next step is, how do we address this?
Well, just to your point, the Mark Bass career took off after, well, it was his second shooting, but his career took off after he killed Abe Sanchez, it seemed like, because he, within a year, he was teaching criminology at Butte College, and in 2020, O'Brien named him Police Officer of the Year for the Chico Police Department. And then when O'Brien's, quote, wingman, Matt Madden, became chief, he promoted Bass to sergeant, along with a bunch of other good old boys. I mean, most of the sergeants currently in the Chico Police Department are come out of SWAT. Hmm. As is Madden. And so, and of course, it's all male, and a majority of them were appointed by O'Brien/Madden, and they had this kind of SWAT orientation. It's
pretty incestuous, I have to say. And in my last minute or so with you, Dave Waddell, from the information that you've received after suing the city of Chico because they would not give you the documents that you rightfully deserve as a journalist in a democratic society, what's next? What are some of the stories that we can expect from you and from Chico Soul moving forward?
Well, one of the things I'm looking at is the way the DA treats the families of the victims of these shootings. You know, it becomes adversarial with him in some cases. And, you know, I mean, he investigates the heck out of the victims, but he doesn't. They don't investigate the... So I have some things I want to look at in that regard. I'd also like to point out, Chico Soul is... does the most important journalism in Chico right now, I think. And I think the listeners ought to really consider supporting it in a big way. We have old stalwarts like founder Leslie Layton and myself and, Karen Laszlo. Now we have Natalie Hansen Ross, who was, probably the best reporter Chico Enterprise Record has had in a long time. And she left that newspaper, and she's done some terrific stories for Chico Soul. Again, please read Leslie Layton's story about my lawsuit victory. If you do that, a donation box will pop up if you care to contribute. And also, we're going to have some new content coming up tomorrow, I believe, a story I'm writing about Saturday event, a memorial for the fallen, that the Tyra Rushing's parents have organized, and a number of family and friends of people who have been killed by law enforcement in Butte County are going to talk about their loved ones who died.
Dave, I've forgot to include that in my script tonight. Tell us when that is going to happen. I know it's on Saturday. Sure. What time and where?
Yeah, it starts at 12:30, and it's at the Trinity Methodist Church on 5th Street. And Saturday, the event's from 12:30 to 4. Among the people who will be talked about are Tyra Rushing, Myra Micalicio, Breanne Sharp, Andrew Thomas, Gabe Sanchez, Desmond Phillips, and Stephen Best. Hmm.
It's a long list for such a small town, I have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Waddell, as always, I appreciate your time. I appreciate the amazing investigative journalism that you do, and I am going to do a shout out. You've already mentioned them. I'm going to do a shout out to Leslie Layton, the founder and an amazing journalist of Chico Soul, and Karen Laszlo, your photojournalist, who does some great work and contributes so much to the work that you do. So for listeners, it's ChicoSoul.org. I strongly encourage you to visit their website. They're always covering the most important issues that just don't get covered. We don't have a whole lot of investigative work happening here in Chico and in Butte County, and they do cover all of Butte County, so I encourage you to do that. Dave Waddell, what did I forget to ask you?
Oh, no, that's fine. I think we covered the territory.
Excellent. All right. Well, then, as always, I appreciate your time, and I suspect you'll be at Trinity Methodist on Saturday, so I will see you there.
I will be there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Dave. I will talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was Dave Waddell, reporter at Chico Soul, and just won the lawsuit against the city of Chico. He received the documents that were being withheld or highly redacted for 4 killings by police officers here in Chico, and Chico taxpayers are now forced to pay $43,000 in legal fees. We're going to take a very, very quick break. When we come back, I will have Hillary Crosby, executive director of Safe Space Winter Shelter, on the phone with me, talking about what they are doing in the middle of this heat wave. You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR. We are back. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio, based right here in Chico, California. My name is Sue Hildebrand. We turn now to the record heat wave that is sweeping the globe, including dangerously high temperatures right here in Butte County and in Chico, especially for folks who have no place to go to get out of the heat. Of course, I'm talking about the unhoused community. Even with the pallet shelter and the tourist shelter, Chico still does not have enough shelter for all of our community members, and the city of Chico has not stepped up to offer a cooling center for folks who have nowhere to go to get out of the heat. The excuse offered for not providing a life-sustaining cooling center is that their tent was vandalized, and therefore they will not be providing this service. The problem with this excuse is that the equipment and buildings and all kinds of other properties are vandalized all the time, but that does not lead to the end of a service by a government agency. It's as if the unhoused community are somehow being punished for the actions of other people. It doesn't seem quite fair. It doesn't seem quite legal. It doesn't seem humane. However, a group that has reliably stepped up to offer critical services to folks who are unhoused is the nonprofit organization Safe Space Winter Shelter, who has provided emergency shelter in the winter for over two decades, but have expanded their services to cooling centers in the summer for hot days just like today. Joining me on the phone to talk about the services being offered and a general overview of the organization is Hillary Crosby, Executive Director of Safe Space Winter Shelter. I am so happy to welcome you to The Real Issue, Hillary.
Thank you for having me, Sue. I appreciate the opportunity.
And as I was reading my own script, to say that you've been in existence for two decades is not quite right. I think it's been about 15 years or something like that. So while I made that initial mistake, give us a general history of the work of Safe Space.
Yeah, originally Safe Space actually hasn't been along that long. Since 2013 was when the original group of volunteers started sheltering people due to cold weather at Chico Peace and Justice Center. And then it kind of formed into a organized group and became Safe Space Winter Shelter. And we've been in operation about 8 years and incorporated for about three.
Oh, only 3 years. So it's,
yeah, officially three.
Yeah. So it has really been truly grassroots. This work has existed since 2013, and I remember that winter very well. It was unusually cold, and we started to see this huge rise in homelessness. But the fact that you've only been incorporated for 3 years, from my perspective, suggests that you all really are a dedicated group of community members just doing the work, not waiting for legal regulations and things like that. Hillary Crosby, talk about now you've been doing the cold weather services, providing those warming spaces, and it turned into the overnight at churches and so on over the years. Mm-hmm. But recently, you have turned your attention to cooling shelters. Talk about that.
Yeah, last year it became apparent that, especially with COVID impact, the library wasn't open, a lot of public buildings weren't open, a lot of just retail spaces weren't open, things like that that really hampered people's ability to get out of the weather. And so I think due to the lack of response from the city and the county, it was, again, a grassroots effort of people banding together saying, what can we do? And so that's where donations came in, and there was some funding from some other resources, smaller nonprofits, and I think United Way supported the effort to get a cooling center off the ground and get people out of the sun. Basic needs and emergent basic needs.
Yeah.
So then this year, it's kind of the same situation. We were hoping that, there would be more involvement on the city level. That doesn't appear to be the case. So the question again was presented to the board of, can we do it? we are a small nonprofit. We do operate on donations and, grant funding. So, again, the community of Chico has been amazing in supporting us. And just kind of coming out and saying, listen, here's some money, what can we do? And we were able to pull staff together last minute, find locations, a Trinity Methodist church, open their doors and said, hey, you're welcome to use our space again. And so we were able to pull it together. We are hoping to be able to keep it open for a couple months, hopefully like we did through about September 15th. Again, it depends on funding. We are working with, we are in talks with the city. Before interim manager Paul Hahn left, I had had several conversations with him, and he was kind of doing what he could to see if there was an opportunity to provide some funding to us, since the city of Chico is not going to operate a cooling center, from my understanding. So those, he's not there anymore. what's his name? Eric Gustafson is continuing those conversations, and we're hoping to get a contract soon. But for right now, we are definitely relying on the good-hearted people of Chico that definitely believe that people need a spot to keep cool and out of the weather. And it's been good.
Exactly. And so just to be clear, The city is not doing it. It has chosen to not provide this service, but you were in talks with Paul Hahn. He has since been replaced by city manager at this point, Mark Sorensen. But you're still talking with the city, and is that the general discussion, that the city would provide funding, financial support to Safe Space? Is that kind of the direction that it's taking?
It sounds like that's the direction it's going. I'm very hopeful for that. I definitely do think that the city should have some participation in, you know, making sure that its citizens are safe and healthy and not, you know, exposed to extreme weather conditions. It's looking hopeful. Until I get that signed contract,
sure.
You know, we'll see. But it seems like conversations are going that direction.
Right, right. Hillary Crosby, let's talk about, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts here. Explain mm-hmm. to somebody that has air conditioning that, you know, doesn't really have to worry about, boy, it sure is hot out there. How am I going to deal with it? Many people just turn on the air conditioning, or they, you know, go to Bidwell and, you know, go into go to Bear Creek or wherever, or Bear Hole, what, you know, go wherever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of folks that don't have that luxury. What exactly is a cooling center? What is it? What do you offer folks?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think, oh, it's only homeless that are using it. That's not the case. There are seniors, there are people at low income that, like you said, they can't just afford to go and turn the AC down to 75 and stay cool. There's a huge economic impact on them if they were able to do that.
Yeah, sure.
So they come down and they're able to just be. You know, there's tables set up. They're welcome to. I was there yesterday, and some people just had some, you know, pencil drawings that they were doing and reading a book and just hanging out. And there's some snacks provided by the community that have donated. Definitely water. We're trying to keep those little rehydration packs that people can add to their water, so that we really try and minimize those heat-related illnesses and deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people are coming in just extremely hot. They've been in their vehicle. They've been walking. They've been, you know, we're not open until 2. So there's quite a bit of time there for
people to
get warm and be hot by the time they get there. But then there's no requirements, really. They're just welcome to come in, sit down, and cool down and stay as long as they like. We're there till 8. And, you know, we're trying to keep some activities there. People want to do puzzles or games. And we're looking at maybe somebody has a projector they can use, so maybe we can play some movies just to kind of pass the time while people are there. Because it is open to the whole community. Anyone, you know, is welcome to come down and turn that AC off and save a few pennies and come join us.
Right, right. And it's more than a few pennies. I mean, it is expensive to run your air conditioning. And it is. It's an amazing service between, so just mm-hmm. just to be clear, between 2 o'clock in the afternoon and 8 at night is really, it's a very hot time of day. But at 1 o'clock today, I was on a Zoom call for work. And I was talking with somebody in New York, actually, and she said, so how hot is it there? And I, you know, pulled up the weather on my phone, and it said 95 degrees, but it was only 1 o'clock. And so it was getting much hotter. So even at 1 o'clock, it's 95 degrees, which is quite hot. So give us the, you gave us some ideas about what's going on. It's a pretty relaxed space. You can do puzzles, you know, maybe a projector for movies, but there's no cost to go in there. Where exactly is it?
So at Trinity Methodist Church, which is on the corner of 5th and Flume, like kind of right across from where City Hall is or the city offices, it's right across the corner, and the entrance is towards the backside, and we have some signage there. There's some porta potties there, so you just kind of go around the corner and you'll see our sign, and then it's a big fellowship hall that they have there. I think it's called Hadley Hall, and it is set up in there.
And is it COVID safe?
We are recommending, of course, that anyone, you know, that is not feeling well, you know, we're trying to make accommodations. We definitely want to be respectful of everyone's health.
Sure.
So if you're not feeling well, please wear a mask. We have them to provide. We have hand sanitizer everywhere. Staff is, most of the staff are also utilizing masks. You know, we want to be able to provide a service, but also stay healthy and keep everyone safe. So definite precautions. We have tables spread out far enough away that people can social distance and, you know, try and keep that air circulating in there.
Right. And so even though there's no cost for somebody to go, it does cost you. Talk about, and a lot of the folks that make this happen are volunteers. And so on the one hand, isn't that wonderful that this is, you know, mostly done by volunteers? On the other hand, people still need to make money and eat, but we'll put that volunteer, the staffing aside for the moment. What are the other costs that are actually involved to Safe Space for offering this kind of space? And then, of course, the next question is, how can people financially support the work that you're doing?
Yeah, the biggest cost that we incur for our sheltering programs is personnel and staff. You know, we really try and make sure our staffing levels are safe for everyone, that, you know, obviously we're in someone else's building. The church is, it's not our property. We want to make sure that property stays safe. We honestly have so few issues, but we do kind of rely on that staff to be there consistently. So that is our main expense, is paying trained staff to run the program, to be there during those hours. Volunteers are amazing, and we do supplement our staff with volunteerism, and that's the only way we could probably make this work. We do run as a bare bones operation as we can, but when you're staffing a 7-day-a-week operation, it does tend to add up. So the other costs, you know, are porta potties. Trinity Methodist has graciously paid for those for our stay there for this session. If we move to other locations, we do generally pay the bill for those services. Mm-hmm. Other costs might be, I'm trying to think here, ice, water. Mm-hmm. So obviously that's why we're always kind of asking for donations for those kind of things.
Sure.
But we definitely want to make sure we always have ice and water on hand.
And so I'm sure that Trinity Methodist has added this activity on their insurance. Are you paying for that, or do we need to do a shout out to Trinity Methodist for covering the cost of the insurance?
I'm sure they have their policy as well. We do have to get our own insurance policy for the shelter season. So any of the churches have to be on our policy, specifically named.
Great. And you did say that you're trying to continue this service through the middle of September. Will it be at Trinity until then, or do you see that you will have to move at some point before the real hottest of the days are over?
Trinity has made their facility available to us through August 15th.
Okay.
With the exception of this Saturday and I believe the next Saturday, they already had pre-scheduled events that are going on there. But otherwise, we should be able to stay there consistently through the 15th. And then the next location would be Chico Friends. They have opened their building up from August 16th through September 15th.
And that's over... Tell us where, we'll talk about that address when we get closer. So there's no sense in making a, confusing anybody. So, all right. So my last question, of course, now that we've talked about where and how much it costs and all of that stuff, Hillary Crosby, how can people that are saying, boy, this is such a great service, how can people support the work, whether volunteering or even financially supporting the work of Safe Space?
Oh, there's so many ways. So on our website, we have a donation page that you're welcome to click on, and it links to our PayPal, and people can donate that way. Our address is listed if people would like to send checks. We also have a fund opened with North Valley Community Foundation, so people can donate right through North Valley Community Foundation, and they will apply it to our fund there. And then we, on our social media, which right now is Facebook, is our primary way of communicating with the interwebs. So you can share our Amazon list or access our Amazon wish list, which we've kind of put some supplies there that we need. A lot of things like sandwich making supplies, peanut butter, drink mixes, those kinds of things are on there. And so you can just order from there and it gets delivered to us. So many ways, and we appreciate it all.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like it's easy to do. And because you are now incorporated, it sounds like all contributions are tax deductible.
They are.
Great. Yep. That's perfect. That's perfect. Hillary Crosby, thank you so much for doing this work. I mean, I do have a little room air conditioner, and it is hard to stay cool. And so it's a tough time right now. It's sort of hard to see when this is going to end. And it's an amazing service that you provide, that you oversee and offer to the community. And so many folks appreciate the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you. We appreciate all the support that is kind of around this effort. We couldn't have launched this as quick as we did without all of these things kind of coming together. So thank you. Thank you to our community.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Hillary Crosby, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye. All right. That was Hillary Crosby, Executive Director at Safe Space Winter Shelter, and they, of course, are offering a cooling center. Just as another reminder, I forgot to build it into my script for today, but just wanted to point it out again that on Saturday there will be a memorial, and for all of the folks that have been killed here in Chico and in Butte County over the last few years. It's being organized by Tyler Rushing's parents, Scott Rushing, who has been on this program several times, as well as Peace and Social Justice. He's been on several programs on behalf of fighting for his son, the death of his son. He's trying to get to the bottom of that. But they will have a memorial service at Trinity Methodist, which is on 5th and Flume, this Saturday from 12:30 until 4 p.m. So this brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue, which has been made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar uses products from local farms and ranches to support community agriculture. They're open every day for lunch and dinner with curbside pickup. They're located at 2359 on the Esplanade here in Chico. For details, you can find Farmstar Pizza on Facebook. You can also find them at farmstarpizza.com. All right, we'll be back next week, same time. Until that time, peace out.